Welcome to Grass Talk Radio. This show is for people who play bluegrass music and anybody who might want to.
The prison guard shut the iron door behind me.
Today is a better day than Christmas. See, Christmas is limited to 24 hours, but I have a deal that will allow you to spread Christmas cheer literally anytime you want. Though, maybe you should just use it in December. In the Christmas Songs for Mandolin ebook, you'll learn how to play 12 classics, including favorites such as Jingle Bells, Joy to the World, and Oh Christmas Tree. Find the link in the show notes to see the full song list and start spreading Christmas cheer today. For a limited time only, use a coupon code at checkout to take 20% off.
Thank you, Mr. Buck. I want to say a few more words about the Christmas Songs for Mandolin ebook. And the first thing I want to point out is that it is very useful for players of all instruments, or simply singers, because every song in the ebook contains the melody and the lyrics. Now, it has the melody written in standard notation and mandolin tablature. But if you're a guitar player and you can read standard notation, you could play the melody by reading the treble clef standard notation. Or if you're a singer, you sing in a choir or you sing in church and you're used to, you know, following the melody line, the flow of the melody by looking at the standard notation, it's perfectly good for that too, because what is notated in the book is the melody for each of these Christmas songs. Also, Jackson included the lyrics. So this little ebook makes a wonderful little, you might say, like sing-along book. If you simply want to just play the chords on a guitar or a mandola or whatever, the chord indications are written above the music. So you can just play those chords. Jackson sits down and plays the chords on the piano. So it serves more than, it's not just for mandolin players, although it does have the additional mandolin information in the form of tablature. But it's basically a little Christmas songbook. So you can gather your friends around. You could print out the pages that you want to sing and hand them out to everybody and have a big old Christmas sing-along just using that simple little book. So I hope you will get that. And I did a bonus episode. I think it was bonus episode 8. And I say I did it. Actually, Jackson put it together. My son and I worked on this when he was, I think he was 9 or 10 at the time. And he did all the notation, and then I assembled it together as an ebook. And he recorded bonus episode 8. So if you've forgotten about bonus episode 8, just go to grasstalkradio.com and scan through that long list of 180-something episodes. 100, I don't know how many it is, 185. And look for bonus episode 8, and you can hear Jackson talk about the Christmas Songs for Mandolin ebook. And he plays a couple of them on the piano. And I can tell you the way he did it was he was just reading the chord indications. So if it said C, he would play some sort of C stuff on the piano. And I grabbed my mandolin and played the melody along with him. But it was pretty cute. And Jackson and I made a deal where Jackson gets half of the money. And this is how he raises a little Christmas cash, you know, for so he can do his Christmas shopping and stuff. And some of you may already have the ebook, and that's great. But those of you who do not might want to get a copy of it. It is not expensive. And as Mr. Buck pointed out, you can get 20% off. And I'm going to tell you how to find that coupon code and also a link directly to the product. You know, if you're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, any of these podcatchers, if that's what you listen to the show on, there is a description. And the link to the Christmas Songs for Mandolin and the coupon code will be spelled out in the description. So generally, you don't even have to go to the website to find it out. It'll be right there in the description for this episode. However, as you all know, I also create a show notes page for every single episode of this podcast, and I will put that information there as well to make it easy for you to find the thing. So I will tell you, though, the coupon discount coupon code is good for 7 days. So don't wait around. Besides, if you wait around too long, Christmas will be over. You need to be practicing these things before Christmas. So it's a 7-day offer. And, you know, I've said many times I didn't want to put time-sensitive information on the podcast, but, you know, what the heck? Why not? So if you're one of those people that is listening to this 10 years from now, I'm sorry you missed the discount, but you can still get the ebook. So all you have to do is just look in the description if you're on Apple Podcasts or something. It'll be right there with a link to the product, and it will spell out the coupon code that you need to type in to get that 20% off. The other option is to go to grassstockradio.com, slide down to this episode, which is episode 174, called Make Something, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes. And right there on that page, I will put a link to the store page that describes the book and everything, where you can buy it. And as you check out, you can just put in that coupon code, which will be there. So you just go to grasstalkradio.com, scroll down to this episode, and you will have that information there as well. All right. Now, let us continue the reading of listener emails. I told everybody in bonus episode 9, send me an email. It's called Do Me a Favor. Tell me about yourself. And have read quite a few of these and have had some people record them themselves and send me the audio recording. I really like that too. But what you're about to hear is an email from Daniel, who is a fellow listener to the show, and pretty interesting. When I saw this email, I was a bit surprised. It's, you know, I think I know who I'm talking to sometimes when I make this, and then I'm surprised that, you know, maybe my view of the whole world is, maybe I view the world in a little too small sometimes. It's a big world, and this email from a listener proves it. And now let's hear from my son Jackson, who will read Daniel's email.
This favor is from Daniel, and he says, "Howdy, Brad. Last time I reached out to you, I was living in Albania and bought your treasure chest. Heard one of your recent podcasts calling for emails and thought I'd write you. If it gets too long to be useful on your podcast, feel free to use part of it or ignore what ain't useful. I recently moved to Beijing, and I'm now in Shanghai, hiding out from the coronavirus and hoping I get approved for a new work permit. I made a career out of teaching English, and now I'm a copy editor and writer. I came to play bluegrass and old-time music while living overseas, so I haven't had the same opportunities to attend jams as most folks get. I'm not sure if you like to hear about the traditional music scenes I've experienced in Korea and China, but they are a mix. Part inspiring and part depressing. Depressing because Beijing, a city of 20 million people, I could only find one banjo player. Inspiring because that dude was like a Voyager spacecraft, alone outside of the galaxy, learning the traditions and skills and waiting to cross paths with someone else who could make sense of it. I'd be glad to get into more details about my experiences. I've hosted jams, joined Irish sessions, had a successful band, and had nothing at all at various times. As part of the lack of players in Beijing, I decided to pick up the fiddle. I've been learning for almost a year and I'm really loving it. Although there aren't any proper teachers that I could find here, I'm trying to apply your principles to it and paying for lessons from Daryl Anger. Mandolin was a great starting point. It really put me ahead of the learning curve. I already know more than 50 fiddle tunes and a ton of genres, so I can focus on bowing and tone. I wish you had more fiddle-oriented content on your show. I think you've spent more time talking about the electric bass than you have fiddles. Unless I missed an episode called Let Me See That Fiddle, which I would dearly love to hear. One other thing I'd like to hear is some content related to old time. I know you're a bluegrass show, but many folks are like I was. They don't know the differences between bluegrass and old time. There's also a lot just a lot of overlap in the song catalogs, communities, and instrumentation. However, I've noticed tension between these communities as well. More experienced folks I've met seem to hold disdain for one or the other. I'm not sure what to make of that, kind of related. I attended an old jam in Richmond, Virginia last summer, and though I was warmly warmed, was politely informed by a well-meaning individual that had the wrong kind of mandolin for the style of music, an F style with F holes. I think that matters much more than banjos, but I digress. I actually would like to know your experiences and feelings regarding old-time music and its relationship to bluegrass. I hope this email finds you well down there in America's Georgia. I'll cut it short right here for now. Thanks for considering my suggestions, and I hope I've given you some ideas to chew over in your mind. From Daniel.
Thank you, Jackson. Wonderful job there. And thank you, Daniel, for sending that information in. It really has opened my mind to, you know, how little I know about the people who are actually listening and where they may be listening. I mentioned one time that a guy was wrote me an email and said he was a riverboat pilot on the up and down the Mississippi and Ohio River, hauling barges. This guy's like a riverboat captain or a tugboat. I don't know what they call this type. I guess tugboat, maybe. Or, I don't know. And I was thinking, you know, this guy is just floating down the river listening to Grass Talk Radio up there in the pilot house. That's pretty cool. And, you know, I just don't picture all the many possibilities of where someone might be and, you know, who's listening to this show. And that's why I think it's important for all of you to do me a favor. So go to bonus episode 9 and listen to that little episode. And then get busy. Tell me and tell everybody else who you are. I think it's very important. Keeps me thinking that I'm actually speaking to real people instead of just sitting in a room with a microphone going, you know. I want to feel like I'm talking to you. So you do that too. All right, let's get to the heart of this episode. And since we have passed Thanksgiving, by the way, had a wonderful Thanksgiving here with the turkey and the sweet potatoes. And I mean, we had quite a little spread here of good old pecan pie. A lot of homegrown things went into, like the mashed potatoes. I grew the potatoes, you know, the sweet potatoes. I grew the sweet potatoes. The pecans, I pick them up. That sort of thing. I didn't raise the turkey, although that is something I've thought about. Maybe next year. And I've never been a turkey hunter. So we don't really have, there's a lot of turkeys in Georgia, and there are a lot of turkeys in this county. But right around our property here, I never see a wild turkey right around us. Probably because there's so many coyotes, you know. Anyway, let's get to the topic for today. Since we're past Thanksgiving and Christmas time's a-coming, I want to remind you that there is something special about getting a Christmas present from someone. Or it could be a birthday present, or just somebody just gives you something. And you're looking at it, and maybe it's a painting, and it's in a frame. And you're like, wow, that sure is a nice painting of the old mill pond, or whatever. And those ducks look pretty good. And then you look at the signature of the painting, and it's signed by the person who just handed it to you. They painted it. That means a lot more. It's like if somebody went down to, I don't know, Wally World and bought a knit sock cap, you know, like a toboggan, and wrapped it up and gave it to you for Christmas. And you pull it out and you're looking at it, and wow, that's pretty nice. Thank you. Thank you, Aunt Helen. That means something. I'll give you that. But if Aunt Helen knitted the thing herself, if she made it herself, it would mean more. So when you make things yourself, there are advantages to that. I want to tell you some of the advantages, and then I want to give you a suggestion. And before I get to those things, I would like to remind you that way back in episode 103, I did an episode called Build Something. And that episode was all about considering the idea of building a musical instrument. So this is really picking up on that same thread, because what I was encouraging you to do there can be done on a smaller scale or in different areas. Maybe you just don't feel like you're ready to build a banjo or something. And so you didn't take my advice in episode 103 and you didn't build an instrument. I am going to give you, 15 or 16 suggestions for things you can make that are related to bluegrass and playing. And everybody's sitting around doing nothing right now, for the most part. You know, not as many jams going on, if any. Even my little jams have stopped because it's too cold right now. Like, we can't sit around out in the barn and have, you know, frost on us and stuff. So there's not much happening. And maybe you've got some time off for the holidays, assuming you have a job. You know, maybe you don't have a job. So you could consider some of these ideas and actually make something. There's something real special about making something yourself. And I think it's becoming almost a lost art in some ways. Now, there are some things that, you know, it just continues, like a guy who builds a house, you know, it's a construction guy, builds a house. Well, he essentially made that house. So there are still people who make things. But, you know, there was a time in our past where we made a lot of things that we had and used. And, you know, if you needed a chair, you figure out how to make a chair or a table. Or maybe your neighbor, you know, he made chairs and you made something else, you know. So there was a division of labor. And if you had money, maybe you would order a chair from Sears and Roebuck catalog. Or the same would go for banjos and fiddles. You know, you go back in the old days, you get one of those old Sears catalogs, those real old ones. And you're looking in there at all the fiddles, violins, and they start at $5. And then they've got the $7.50 model. And then they've got the $10 one. And then they've got the Expert, the European flamed maple Stradivari copy for $12.50. But if you go back and think about, you know, inflation since the 1890s, that was a lot of money. So a lot of people looked through that catalog and price was an object. If I could buy fiddles for $5 a piece, I think I would just buy the fiddle and not make it myself. But a lot of people chose to make things simply because they desired to have them and they could not afford to purchase the commercial version of it. So people made a lot of things themselves. And let me rattle off here. I'm going to rattle my paper just a minute because it's over here in a shadow and I can't read it. I'll tell you the things that the benefits of making things yourself. The first thing is pride. You can take pride. I think you get a little extra pride knowing that you made it. You know, if I bought a little three-legged milking stool at a yard sale, it just in no way would it ever be as cool as if I made a little three-legged milking stool. You get what I'm saying? Now, some people just forgotten this. They just go to Target. You know, they get on Amazon. They just buy stuff. And I think, you know, we kind of live in that throwaway culture. I said in that episode 103, Build Something, that the first mandolin that I built, the F5, back in 1983, I said, I just can't part with that thing. I put too much blood, sweat, and tears into that instrument. I just, you know, selling it just would be impossible to me. I just like to have it, you know. I have a lot of pride in the fact that I made that thing. And it played good, by the way. Go back and listen to 103. But you'll get a sense of pride in what you have accomplished. And second thing, that's first thing, you pride in creating something. Second thing is, it's fun, which could also be called interesting, engaging. You know, the perhaps you've never made XYZ. And so you proceed upon the project and set up a plan for how you're going to create XYZ. And, you know, it's a fun thing to do. It's certainly more fun than sitting around watching TV, you know, where everything just poured into your noggin. You know, they might as well put a giant funnel on top of people's heads and just pour it in. It's such a time waster, too. Anyway, it is fun to make things, regardless of how they turn out. Even the worst project ever that completely, totally fails is still fun, and it leads to the third advantage to making things yourself, and that is education. You will learn some new things when you try to make something. And as I go through the list of things that you could potentially make while you're sitting around here, every one of these things, unless you've already done it 1,000 times, you will learn things as you do it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with continuing education for the human mind. And you don't get information poured into your head. I mean, I could sit here and give you step-by-step instructions and tell you exactly, you know, like following a recipe out of a recipe book, something I'm not very prone to do. You know, if I make a pecan pie, I'll look at the recipe and then I'll go, I don't know, that seems like an awful lot of sugar. I may back off the sugar. And when it comes to things like salt, you know, I tend to just shake it until, you know, I don't measure stuff like that. And that's why I can't, in the kitchen, I can't make, you know, things like souffles and that candy my mother used to make called Divinity. I'm sure mine would fail colossally because I don't follow instructions that well. So you learn from your mistakes. Oh, man, I put way too much salt on that beef jerky. Whoa, need to cut back the salt next time, that kind of thing. So it's educational, which is good for the mind and, you know, your brain. The fourth advantage to making things yourself, and I put a question mark after this because it isn't universally true. Sometimes this isn't true at all, but sometimes it is. And that is cost savings. Sometimes it's a lot less expensive to make something for yourself than it is to purchase something. However, in this current era where all the factories in America were shut down, all the equipment sent off to Mexico or China, and then they pay the employees a whole lot less to do the same thing that people in Ohio used to do on the very same machines in many cases. Stamping out various widgets and metal parts and things and whatever. Somebody else is making it, and the labor rate is cheaper, and the regulations are less, and so they can peddle that stuff considerably cheaper. And we all think it's great. Hey, you know, I was talking about, in one of the episodes, I was talking about buying, it was in episode 103, I was talking about that I had a French horn that my parents had bought on a time payment plan, and the thing cost something, and it was used when we got it, was $1,800. And my son, a couple of years ago, bought a French horn off of Amazon for, I think it was less, might have, I don't know, right around $200. And it's beautiful. It looks just like the Reynolds horn that I had, which was made in, I think, Elkhart, Indiana. That was where all the musical instruments, all the band instruments were made. I don't think they make very many of them there anymore, probably a few, but a lot of them are being made in China on the same tooling, on the same machines, by the same methods, and they're very good instruments. Some of them, I mean, there are some that are junk, but there's some really good stuff coming out of there. But, you know, those people in Indiana that used to work there, building the Olds or the Reynolds or the Kahn trumpets or whatever, they're not doing that anymore. And when a kid needs a trumpet, he goes on Amazon, he buys one from China. Now, I'm not saying that is inherently good or bad, because you got the cost savings whenever you want to buy something. But you also have the unemployed workers. and the kids graduating from high school. You know, if you lived in that town, if you lived in Elkhart, Indiana in the 1940s or 50s or something, and you graduate in high school, you could go off to college, or you could join the military, or maybe go to work, you know, where dad works or mom works, and, you know, glue pads onto flutes or something, or make flutes and learn how to solder brass and, you know, spin bells for horns and stuff. But that choice just isn't available like it used to be. So number four is cost savings. Sometimes you can save money and sometimes you can't. I think a lot of it depends upon the materials. If you set out to build an instrument and you get the Stumac catalog out and you start adding up all the little components that you're going to need, you may actually spend more than you would for a similar quality instrument, you know, that's coming from China. However, you know, you do have the pride, you do have the fun, and you do have the education. And maybe you can save some costs. Certainly, if you can get your hand, if let's say it's a wood, something you're building out of wood, if you can scare up wood someplace other than ordering it online from some expensive wood dealer, you know, if you have a source for some of these things, or let's say the tuners. One time there was a salvage place up on Claremont Road in Atlanta. I don't remember the name of the place, but they had all this stuff in there. It's like stuff that was broken by UPS, basically, and they're selling it in there. I went in there and they had a barrel, like a paperboard barrel, stuffed full of broken guitar necks, just like every kind of guitar neck you ever saw, that were, I guess, snapped off by, you know, in shipping. And I guess somebody bought this barrel of broken necks, and they probably had barrels of, you know, guitar bodies and stuff too. I went up there and bought three or four of these guitar necks, which all had the tuners on them, and most of them had fingerboards hanging on. They were like $2 or $3 each. So for $3, you know, I got a brand new set of tuners, guitar tuners. So if you've got sources for some stuff, for some of the parts, or you make them yourself, like I have made banjo tailpieces myself, you know, got some metal and a torch and bent metal and, you know, did all that stuff and drilled and filed and hacksawed and all that. You can actually make some of these things. But I can't swear that you're going to save money. But, you know, maybe you'll make up for it in the pride, the fun, and the education. But the fifth thing, and then I'm going to quickly rip through this list of, you know, little ideas to get your wheels turning. Maybe there's something you could make. And the fifth thing that you'll get out of this is the possibility for customization. So let's say you got a Dobro capo and you bought it down at the local music store, or you went online and they were selling this particular Dobro capo or guitar capo, whatever. Could be anything. But there's just something about it that you're not 100% satisfied with it. And so you set out to make your own. It's like the mousetrap. Do you know how many mousetraps have been invented? You know, it's insane. I used to go in Tractor Supply and look at all the mousetraps. Somebody's coming up with a new mousetrap every day, you know. And old designs are still around, and some of them have been changed where they have the artificial cheese on there, and they got the live catch mousetraps, and they got glue boards, and everybody's thinking of a new way, and some of them might be better than the old way, you know? So you get that benefit too, that if there's something you'd like to try and do differently, well, make it yourself, you know? Maybe you want to make the fingerboard a little wider, you know, if you're building an instrument. Or let's say you're making a capo and you decide, you know, this is made out of brass. I wonder what it would sound like if it was made out of stainless steel. And what if I made it a 16th of an inch thicker to give it more mass? Or what if I did this? What if I did that? These are the sort of things that you can just do it. You know, you're the one building it. If you're not happy with a three-legged milk and stool and you'd rather have a one-legged milk and stool, which, by the way, they actually exist. I don't know if you've ever seen the one-legged milking stool. I think it was, you know, invented in Scandinavia or something. And it was really cool because it had a belt attached to it, and you basically strapped it to your butt. So you could get up and walk around, and the chair would stay stuck to your rear end. Only had one leg on it, and then when you need to sit down in front of old Bessie and start milking, you just sat down, and that one leg gave you something to sit on. The one-legged stool. That's pretty cool. Somebody had to think that up, and somebody had to make it themselves for the very first time. In fact, I don't know if they ever commercially sold those, but maybe they were in the Sears catalog or something. I don't know. But anyway, just to review the benefits, you have the pride in making it yourself. You have the fun of the activity. You're going to get some education out of it. You potentially could have some cost savings, maybe. And you have the ability to customize and create what you dream up. Now, let's talk about what could you make? And it's interesting because I'll tell you as we go along, but almost everything on this list I have done myself at one point. Here's a very simple one. What if you made your own pig? I've seen some of these high-dollar pigs. I mean, they can get pretty pricey. But, I mean, a pig, how hard could that be to make? Well, find some different materials and maybe, you know, just hack one out yourself and try it out. I wrote an article one time in my Mando University News, which is still secretly hidden on my website, and an article about how to make your own picks out of cow hoof. And I'm not going to go into a long story about how to do it, but it was a learning experience, and I made some pretty good picks, and I really, really liked them. So I wrote that article, put it in the newsletter, and then I reprinted that article. And these are flat picks, you know, essentially. And I put that article into my book, The Mandolin Handbook. So any of you would-be pick makers could grab the Mandolin Handbook and that information of how to make your own pick. The title of the article was Poor Man's Tortoise Shell. But the principles apply to even if you were using plastic or, you know, you figured out how to cook casein on your stove or whatever, you could make your own pick. And let me mention too, you could also make thumb picks. You figure out how to do that. I made one thumb pick and I made it out of a cow hoof. The cow hoof is a sort of 3D object. So I just looked over that cow hoof and I figured out exactly where to saw it so that it would, you know, already preformed have that shape which would wrap around your thumb. And so it was one piece of cow hoof. Took a tremendous amount of work to make this pick. But anyway, can be done. And certainly you see these picks that are, you know, have a metal band that is either riveted or somehow attached to some other material for the striking surface. So you could consider making a thumb pick. You could also make metal finger picks. You know, get you a sheet of brass or something and, you know, some tin snips and files and, you know, a drill and some stuff. You could do it. So just consider these things. And the thing about it is, you may come up with something you really like and you could do it 10 different ways until you find the perfect thing. And then other people might see it and go, wow, that was really cool. Where'd you get this? Well, I made it. Oh man, could you make me one? You know, any one of these things I'm going to mention to you could become something, a little side hustle thing, either to earn some money or just to help out other people. Say, I found this, I designed this, and here's the item number two, your own capo. You could make a capo. Make a capo. How hard could that be? Come on, people. It ain't like building your own nuclear reactor or even, you know, constructing your own Heathkit HW101 ham radio, you know. Be a little more difficult to do that, but I mean, think about it, capo, not that complicated. and we use them all the time. So you might come up with that, and then, and it's really superior to the ones that are currently in use, and other people are going to want them, and you can just help them out by creating them for them too, or make a little money for your trouble. It could be a little side hustle. So you might consider item number two, making a capo. You know, every capo that has come along, somebody out in their garage made the first one, you know. And I've had a multitude of capos over the years. And some of them were pretty good, and some of them had features that I'm like, I'm not so sure about that. Like that Sabine, S-A-B-I-N-E, had these weird little steel clips on the bottom that you pushed right up against the fret so that it would be guaranteed to be in proper alignment and all that. But anyway, I just found them to snag on the string when I was trying to get it on and off. So sometimes you have a good idea and sometimes you don't. But consider making a capo. I've done that. I made a banjo capo that could be applied with one hand that did not have any moving parts. Think about that. I still have that thing, too. It works beautifully. Anyway, I haven't patented that thing or sold any of them or anything, and don't intend to. I just made myself what I wanted and was, you know, pretty proud of that thing. You could literally put the capo on in 1 second, just like that. And several other people looking, where'd you get that capo? So I made it. Oh, man, could you make me one? No, forget it. It took way too much time. Anyway, that was number two, capo. Consider making your own capo. You know, the world always needs a new mousetrap. By the way, there's a capo museum online. Just search for capo museum. I think I mentioned that in a podcast once before. Third thing you might make, a little arts and crafts project, would be to build your own case. All the time on these forums like Banjo Hangout, Mailing Cafe, and stuff, people pop in there and go, does anybody know where I can get a case for a, you know, 12-inch tenor banjo with a blah, blah, blah? It won't fit in the case I have. Or I've got a F-style mandola that was custom-made. Where do I get a case for that? Well, see, in the old days, I mean, think about it. How hard is a case? You know, it's a box. And it either has some covering on the outside or maybe just bare wood, like those old wooden baby coffin fiddle cases. It doesn't have to have a covering on it, but it can. You know, you could cover yours with a Kulis Tolex, you know, or something. Or tweed, make yourself a tweed case. But, I mean, building a case, think about it, is considerably simpler than building the instrument that it carries. You know, in terms of, like, how careful you have to be with your woodworking skills and things like that. And you could build the perfect case for something. I got a lot of instruments around the house that I don't have a case for. And if I wanted to, I could just start making some cases, you know. Obviously, you're going to have some costs. And if you have just your standard dreadnought and you're trying to save money, it's probably cheaper just to buy one, you know. But you don't have the ability to customize it to make it exactly what you want. How many people who have Martin guitars with a thermoform Martin case bellyache and gripe about the fact that there isn't room inside the case to put your strap, depending upon what kind of strap you have? There is very little storage capacity inside a Martin case. So, you know, a lot of guys have to roll up their strap real small and jam it down between the neck and the upper shoulders, the bouts of the guitar. Or they lay it out flat on top of the guitar, which is, I don't know if that's a good idea. Or they just roll it up and stick it in their pocket and carry it in the other hand, you know. And so you can custom design a case. And by the way, you could make gig bags. You could just consider it. Consider making your own case. I've done it. I made a couple of dulcimer cases. I made a cardboard fiddle case one time. When I was in high school, made it out of cardboard. It was a perfectly good case. All it required was some cardboard and some tape and a knife. And it was a decent little case. And, you know, because I had this borrowed fiddle and I didn't want to tear it up hauling it around, you know. So I just made a little cardboard case for it. You could do stuff like that. Here's item number 4. I swear any fool could do this. Make your own strap. Make your own instrument strap. I've made a many of them. You know, a lot of people try to duplicate the commercial strap. Well, mostly you don't need all that. Like, the guitar strap that I use is just one strip of leather with one hole in one end and 3 holes in the other end. That's it. That's all it is. It's like a 3-inch wide piece of leather. That's all it is. Mandolin strap, same thing. You can find you some leather, cut you a strip. If you got an F style, if you punch a hole in each end, I'm not going to give you instructions how to do it. You could write me and maybe I would later put it on here. But we're talking punching 2 little holes and then taking a razor blade and connecting the 2 little holes and making a little slit so it'll fit over the end pin. And you do the exact same thing on the other end. And all you do is you take the strap and thread it through itself, and that creates a little loop. And then you put the loop over the scroll, and you put the other end, and you could put multiple holes if you want it to be adjustable. This is so simple. And if you need some leather, start hanging around Goodwill and look through the belts. Oftentimes they have belts for like $2. Look for real leather, you know, and you might get the leather for super cheap and just take an old belt and cut it up. Sometimes with belts too, they take multiple layers of leather. And, you know, if it's a good quality belt, you know, it'll usually be leather on the outside, maybe something else on the inside. You just have to look at the stuff and you may peel that apart or whatever. You figure it out. But, you know, buying you a side of you know, a half cow hide or something, you may have enough there to make like 500 straps. So you may spend way more than you need to if you go to a leather place. But you can buy, you know, leather already pre-cut at certain widths. It's, you know, leather strapping. You can buy those from leather supply places like Weaver Leather, that kind of place. It just comes on a roll, you know, and you just measure it out, cut it, punch your holes, bingo, you got yourself a strap. So consider strap. I've even made a cloth strap one time for a banjo, folding multiple layers of cloth over and kind of quilting it on a sewing machine. Made a great strap. How about number 5? This would be for the real adventurous types. What about making your own strings? Now, I have to admit, I've never made a wound string in my life, and I probably won't. But I went through a phase where I was popping a lot of first and second strings on the mandolin. This is way back, and I was too ham-fisted and playing too hard and stuff like that, and not changing them often enough. So I always needed extra first, you know, E strings and A strings. Now, if I broke a wound, you know, I put a commercial one on there. But I thought, man, I could probably just make these. It's basically just a piece of wire with a loop in the end of it. So I ordered some 10/1000ths music wire and some 14/1000ths music wire. Came in a little roll. It was like, I don't know, 250 feet of wire on a little spool. It's the exact same stuff that they're using to make your mandolin strings that you pay so much for. All you got to do is learn how to twist that little loop. So I built a little machine that would clamp the string in, and I would bend it around this little hook and then tighten this other little clamp to hold that the little free end down and then turn the crank. Clip it off. Bingo. I just made a string. You know, you do have to build that little machine. Maybe you could wind them by hand, but, you know, you got to get them tight enough so that they don't slip. Anyway, I made up a whole slew of first and second strings for mandolin. I probably cranked out a couple of banjo strings, too. Anyway, you might consider that. You know, maybe, maybe not. Number 6, how about make your own rosin? Think about, hey, here's an idea. Rosin repair. Have you ever dropped a block of rosin, fiddle rosin? That stuff will shatter. It's very brittle. I have many times, I always save those pieces. It hits the floor and it breaks into 9 pieces and I put it in a little envelope or something, save it up, and then remelt it. And it's pretty easy to do. I'm not going to give you instructions how to do it. But it's pretty easy to remelt it and remold it. You can make your own mold out of aluminum foil and cardboard. Like take a little matchbox and line it with foil or something. You could make a little wooden thing. Like you see a lot of fiddle rosin. It's a little U-channel, a piece of hardwood. And all you have to do is put masking tape around the ends of it. And then pour your liquid rosin in there and you're reforming it. And then let it cool. Or you could make it from scratch. And I tried that once. I have some, Ranger Brad's genuine Southern Pine fiddle rosin that I made because we had some pine trees out in the back here that were getting hit real hard with pine beetles. The trees were dying. 5 or 6 big old pine trees were just riddled with pine beetles. And they ultimately, all those trees did in fact die. And it was during a drought. We had a super, super dry year back 3 or 4 years ago. And so they were suffering because when a beetle chews on a pine tree and tries to make entry, the pine tree's defense is to produce sap and, trap him in this goopy, sticky sap. Well, when they're not getting enough moisture, when there's not enough rain, they can't produce that easy flowing sap that tends to protect their wounds. So the beetles just have their way and kill the thing. But what I found was several of these pine trees just have these little clusters. Looks like little white popcorn all around the bark. And you can actually tell what species of beetle has attacked the tree based upon where these little where the sap is being exuded from a wound. And then it just kind of forms into this popcorn crusty looking little shape. And usually they look white because they contain a lot of moisture from rain or fog or just atmospheric moisture. It's these white hunks and they're real brittle and you can find them on the side of pine trees. And these, trust me, I had a lot of them. I took a bucket out there and filled it up about halfway with just breaking these chunks of dried, white pine sap off of these trees. Put them all in the bucket, melted them down, filtered it, cooked it a little bit. I'm not going to give you my secret recipe. And then poured it into little homemade molds and then rosined up the old bow with it. Worked just as good as the super sensitive rosin that I bought at the store. It really did. It was amazing. So that's 6. You might make your own rosin, Number 7, you might think about making yourself a custom little armrest. Armrests seem to be so popular for mandolin people these days. Everybody wants to have a little fancy little armrest. And the same goes for banjo. I have made my own banjo armrest because I had on one particular banjo, I had this metal chrome-plated, ugly-looking thing, and it was real sharp and kind of dug into your arm and stuff. So I just used the hardware from that and then made a wood top for it I made it out of cherry and made it a little more rounded, a little smoother, and looked really good. Unfortunately, I sold that banjo, and I forgot to take, I should have took it off. Put the old one back on. But you might consider making an armrest. Just a little hint, if you decide to make a mandolin armrest, you can purchase a little set of clamps. What you do is you buy a viola chin rest. So it's chin rest that goes on a viola. Buy a super cheap one and just pull the hardware off of that thing and throw the chin rest away. And replace what was the chin rest with your new armrest. So viola hardware, that the clamp that holds it on, is a good size for most mandolins. You figure out what to do on guitar and banjo. Anyway, number eight, if you're in a band or you run PA and sound equipment or whatever, you might want to think about building some road cases. You know, cases for all your gear. Maybe build a case that carries your mics. You could build a whole rack system with casters on the bottom and rack mount gear inside and your mixer on top. And, you know, you can build this. If you can build a doghouse, you could probably build something like that. So you might consider, you know, road cases, PA gear. Make some of that stuff yourself. I've done it. And it looks better, too, and it protects the gear. It looks better than carrying. What I'm saying is if you bring your mixer in, just carrying it in your hands, you know, and setting it on a cart table or setting it on the floor and your amp, you just tote it in. It's much better if you got a case that thing can live in, you know, and it protects it and looks cool too. Here's number nine. This kind of goes along that same thing. If you're performing any, maybe you want to build your own light set, some stage lighting. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. Just think about it. I mean, we're talking, you know, switches, wire, a tripod, little box, some sockets to screw some light bulbs in. I mean, this is not rocket science. Okay, you can figure this out. And it's amazing how many gigs. I've got two little light sets that I carry around. Not elaborate. I mean, some people get these big spreads of cans and all this stuff, you know. It's just too much to carry around to your average little gig. But a little bit of light thrown onto the band makes your show better. And I've got a little miniature set that is often, there are two tripods, but I generally, many times, only carry one. Just to throw a little light on the action so that the audience knows where the band is, and also so you don't trip over the cords and the monitors and stuff, and you can see what you're doing a little better. So maybe build your own lighting system. All right, number 10, if you're doing performing and things like that, maybe learn how to make your own cables. And by that, I mean take bulk wire off of a spool, make it the length you want, and get some connectors and learn how to solder. And put those things together yourself. Then you can make exactly what you need. You know, if 6 feet's too short and 10 feet's too long, what about 8'2"? You know, you can make that. There used to be a music store I used to go to in Forest Park, and one of the employees just sat there behind the counter, and when he wasn't doing nothing else, he made guitar cables, you know, with the little shrink tubing on each end. And, you know, he'd be just sitting there. It's something to do when there was nobody in the store. You know, pull off 10 feet, cut it, do all the stripping, get his connectors out, had his soldering station set up there, solder them up, put them up, roll them up, put a little card around. I think they had a business card just printed, you know, with the price and what it was, 10-foot guitar cord. You know, staple it, lay it in the pile, make another one. So it can be done. And clearly, they were spending less for the parts than they were selling them for. So you could have some cost savings there. And you could generate any kind of custom cable you might need. All right, number 12. This is one that I've never done, but I've thought about it. And I've made little drawings a few times thinking, wow, maybe I'll build my own music stand. You know, a really cool music stand. Really beautiful hardwoods, maybe some carving in it, and just a beautiful wooden music stand, you know, like you might have seen in the court of Louis the 14th or something when the violinist is playing or whatever. You know, something really, really fancy. That'd be a neat little project. Make a music stand. You might even be able to make a music stand that just lives in your practice room, that you have a music stand and combined with a cabinet to keep all your books and music and tuners and all that little stuff in this really cool little cabinet, and it's sort of more like a practice station, you know? That's a possibility. Here's another one, number 13. What about a display case? You know, some of these instruments we have, we're really proud of, but, you know, if you got any good sense, you don't just hang it on the wall and let the dust get all over it, and it's suffering the ravages of humidity changes and so on. It's smarter probably to keep it in a case. But why not have a case that's a glass front? You could have a freestanding case, you know, like a little cube, little thing, a little box, you know, that's designed to hold your instrument inside a little glass door. You could put a lock on it, you could put a light in it, you could have little storage drawers inside there. Or maybe it's just a really cool instrument that you don't play. And, you know, you could build this wall type case that holds it securely and beautifully. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like a shadow box, you know? But you'd have to custom build it for your instrument. Of course, some of these things you can go online and buy and let somebody else have the fun of doing it and the pride of doing it, and you just cough up the money. But I say, why not? I have one in progress right now, by the way. It is complete except for the piece of glass in the front. I haven't gone to the glass place yet to get my piece of glass to finish it. And I do need to finish the instrument hanger inside it. Anyway, that's a possibility. Build a display case for your fabulous instrument. And similar to that is number 14. You could construct your own instrument stand. Something that just holds it up. Props it up, you know. You know, if the people who build them and sell them can make them, I don't see why you can't. And you may be able to improve upon it and make it more like what you really want, you know. Number 15, you could, this is very simple, you could make your own little instrument case humidifier. I've made, I don't know, half a dozen of these over the years. Just, you know, some kind of little plastic snap close container and a piece of sponge and a hole puncher. You know, you punch a few holes in it or burn holes through with a hot nail, perforate it. You take a little sponge, get it good and soaked with water and squeeze it out so it doesn't drip. Put it in there, snap the lid, throw it in the case, close the case. Instrument humidifier, that's a possibility. I will not be held responsible for you spilling water inside your case. You need to make sure you don't ever have any liquid water floating around in there. You're just trying to get the water vapor only. You could do that and, you know, figure out your own way. They used to have these little plastic cases that you could buy at the dollar store or any drugstore or something that was designed to hold a bar of soap. It was just a soap case, you know. You put your bar of soap in this case, I guess, if you're traveling or going camping or something. One of those would be great. Stick a sponge inside there, put a little water on it, and punch some holes in the top. But again, be super cautious of drips. But you could maybe devise a really super cool humidifier. Here's the last one, because I'm really talking way too long today. Because I am excited about people who make their own stuff. And if you make any, if you listen to this and then you know, I'm going to make some. Send me an email, send me a picture of what you made or a video or whatever, and I'll mention it on the show and post it on the show notes where everybody else can see, you know, here's your, you know, you made your own rosin or you made your own display case or you made your own picks or whatever. Let me know if any of this stuff is soaking in and you actually take it upon yourself to do it. Here's another idea. If you're performing in a band or anything, you might want to consider making a banner that has your band name on it. When I was in Cedar Hill, we had two of these. We had what was known as the sign. And the sign were 3 2-foot by 2-foot plywood panels hinged together so that they folded accordion style. And so if you unfolded it, you're 6 feet by 2 feet. And it was all painted and had in gigantic letters across the front, Cedar Hill. That was the wooden sign. And when you close it up, had two handles on top that were made out of an old Boy Scout belt. Two handles so you could carry it around. And we actually had a bag that went into to keep it from getting all scarred up when you threw it in the trailer. We pulled that thing out at every single gig. And here's the logic behind it. People are in the audience. They're walking around. They don't know who you are. They have no idea who you are. Maybe they take a picture. Boom, took a picture of the band. Well, there's your name. Your name's in the picture. Duh, that's super good marketing. Well, that thing just leaned against the floor monitors on the audience's side. That was, you know, you ran all your wires. It also gave you a nice little hiding place behind there where you keep a beer down there or something and the audience couldn't see it. Because it was blocked by this 2-foot by 6-foot folding piece of plywood with your band name on it. I have countless pictures of our band performing, and there's that sign. There's no question who that band is. It says right there in big, giant letters, 20-inch high letters, Cedar Hill. Very simple. But we also had a cloth banner. And the cloth banner was, you know, something like, I don't know, 8 feet by 8 feet. And you folded it in half, and on one half of it, sewn on with various colors of felt, was the giant word Cedar Hill. So we could fold this thing in half, string a rope up, or a piece of wire, or use thumbtacks or pushpins or whatever, and stick it up on the back of the stage when we were playing, once again, so that every time somebody's looking up there, they know it's you, you know? Because I don't have the benefit of, oh, everybody knows Bill Monroe. When they see Bill Monroe, they know it's Bill Monroe. We didn't have that advantage, but we wanted people to remember our name, you know? Oh, yeah, Cedar Hill. So a banner is good, and that thing served double duty because the name was on the lower half. That also was the banner for our record table. So you got your basic card table, and you throw that cloth over it, and right across the front, it says Cedar Hill. So when all those bands all have their record tables all set up, everybody's just got a bare table, and you look under the table and you see the guy's legs and you see the boxes of their extra CDs and all this kind of stuff. Not our table. Our table had a tablecloth with our name across the front, and it would just fold up so nice and be packed away with all the record gear. That's something you could make. And something that I've never made but I've always wanted to make is something called a stand tower. And if it was handheld, you would call it a mic flag. If you've ever seen a reporter go up and shove a mic in somebody's face, there's a little cube stuck on the mic that has their station call sign on it. You know, like 11 Alive or WAGA or Channel 5 or something. You know, it's an ID. So they're holding that mic. But you see them vertically on floor stands, such as the Grand Ole Opry. How many pictures of performers are standing in front of that central mic at the Grand Ole Opry, and there's that sign running down the stand that says Grand Ole Opry, you know? That's called a stand tower. That'd be a simple project to make. Very simple. Anyway, these are just some ideas. Go get busy and make something. And by the way, we're going to go out with a, I've said this multiple times, and I want to thank everyone who has supported the show on Patreon. That is patreon.com/Bradley Laird. If you would like to do that, I would certainly appreciate it. Or if you go to my website and purchase any of my materials and all that kind of stuff, I certainly appreciate that too, because that supports the show and keeps this thing going and growing. But as I've said many times, I don't really have any sponsors on the show. I plug other people's stuff from time to time and bring people on, let them plug their stuff. I have no problem with that. But this show is self-supported, and the only commercials you will hear are from my main sponsor, me, myself, and I. So let's go out with one more little jingle created by Mr. Buck. If anybody around your house is getting a banjo for Christmas, then you should listen to this. And also, the coupon code and link to the product will be in the show notes, exactly as I said for the Christmas songs for mandolin at the beginning of this show. So you just look in the description or go to grasstalkradio.com, scroll down to this episode, click it, and you'll find your links and the discount coupon codes there. But for the banjo player or potential banjo player, a lot of banjos come out from under Christmas trees each year. This is a great way to get people started. So I will talk to you guys in the next episode. Take it away, Mr. Buck.
Do you have a new banjo player in your life? Well, Without proper direction, they'll put the banjo down just as quickly as they picked it up. Don't let a lack of direction be the reason the banjo gathers dust. Pair your gift with the complete banjo learning system. The system is packed with the equivalent of a year of weekly banjo lessons, so your new plucker will always know what to work on next. Click the link in the show notes to get the full details and take 20% off for a limited time only.